Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. Those familiar words come from a hymn which we actually will sing today during communion, Amazing Grace. And while for so many of us those words have very personal connection, and we feel some personal meaning in them, they actually are all about one man's conversion. One man being turned from his blindness to seeing in a new way. One man being turned to see the will of God in his life to such an extent that his life was changed, that he was dramatically changed and transformed. The author of those words is John Newton, who at some point in his life was actually participating in the slave trade, and then had a conversion experience, began to see God at work in his life, calling him to something new. And in that newness and in that call, he gave up his work in the slave trade. He was converted. He became actively a Christian, worshiping God. And then he actively worked for the end of the slave trade throughout the British Empire, was ordained, and lived a life of Christian service and prayer. We can think of blindness as a physical affliction, of physically not being able to see. But then there's also a kind of blindness which is about not being able to see what might be before us. Being blind to something. Being blind perhaps to a way that God might be calling us. Being blind to a way of life. In our gospel this morning, we encounter this man who is born blind. And the story begins with this physical blindness. He has not been able to see from birth. He is blind. And he regains his sight. He doesn't ask for healing, but Jesus encounters him. The disciples, in seeing him, want to know, who sinned? This man? His parents? Why is he blind? That age-old question of why are certain people afflicted with certain things? And in that first century culture, there was an understanding that that blindness must have been the result of someone's sin. There was punishment going on. But Jesus says, no one sinned. And in fact, this man's blindness is a chance for the works of God to be revealed. And so Jesus heals this man, makes mud, applies it to his eyes, tells him to go wash, and this one who was once blind can see. That's where it begins. But then what happens is that man not only has his physical blindness restored, but through the course of this story, he more and more comes to see who Jesus is. He comes more and more to understand this one that has healed him. Several times the Pharisees, who are not entirely comfortable with what has happened, this healing took place on the Sabbath. Who is this one restoring sight? Only the Messiah can do that. That's one of the marks that the Messiah has come, that the blind receive their sight. So the Pharisees question this man several times. The first time they ask him, who did this? He says, the man called Jesus. The second time they ask him, what does he say about Jesus, this one who did this? He says, he was a prophet. But they keep questioning him. They question his parents. They question him again. And he says to them, he doesn't know who this man is. He doesn't know where he comes from. But then he says to the Pharisees, here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships and obeys his will. He's telling the Pharisees, this man has to be of God. Only one of God could have opened my eyes, could have restored my sight. Well, the Pharisees don't like this, and they drive him out. Jesus then seeks him out, and on finding him, asks him, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man says, tell me who he is. And Jesus says, I am he. And so the man says he believes, and he worships Jesus. So this man who was born blind not only regains his sight, but like last week's story of the woman at the well, he increasingly comes to see who Jesus is. comes to see Jesus as the Son of God, that Messiah, the Anointed, the one sent to liberate God's people. So indeed, the man's blindness is a cause for God's works to be revealed, and the man sees that. So this is all about blindness rooted in a state of being, about assuming things are a certain way, and then having our mind open, having our sight expanded to see new reality. In his book, Desiring the Kingdom, James K.A. Smith says, "Our imaginations get stuck in a rut, and it becomes difficult to get out of them to imagine things differently. We are where we are, and we expect things to be that way, like it or not." He goes on to say, too often situations are taken to just be the way things are. But this gospel says it doesn't have to be like that. That God has come opening our eyes to see new reality. That things can change. Now, when that happens, it's not always necessarily easy or comfortable. And in fact, the man goes through some questioning and some difficult times with those Pharisees. He is driven out. It's not always easy. In her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, Annie Dillard has a chapter on seeing. And in that chapter, the narrator talks in the most beautiful way about looking at the physical world, observing nature. Beautiful language about what is seen. The chapter then progresses to talk about the early experience of surgery to correct cataracts. Those who are blind from birth cannot see because of cataracts. And those early surgeries were performed on people of all ages. And a doctor recorded the experience these people had as their sight was restored, or given them actually the first time. And all of them talked about the wonder of creation, the beauty of color, how amazing it was to finally be able to see the world. But they also talked about great difficulty in judging distance, great difficulty with depth perception, with size, that physical objects looked like patches of color and not the concrete things that they had touched with their hands. And some of them found themselves very disoriented. One woman talks about when she goes outside, covering her eyes because it was easier and less frightening for her to negotiate the physical world without seeing. The sight of everything confused her. And there was one very sad case of a 15-year-old boy who was born blind, had his sight restored, who was actually originally an asylum for the blind. And after living sighted for some time, he said this, "I can't stand it anymore. I want to be sent back to the asylum again. If things aren't altered, I'll tear my eyes out." For him, it was too much trying to negotiate a world that was so radically different from the one that he had known for so many years. It was almost too much to bear. So with restoration of sight, with new sight, with healing of blindness comes a perception of a world that is different, where size and scale and proportion and depth are all different than they seem to be at first. And there certainly is good cause for security in the way things have always been. But that's not our call as Christians. Our call as Christians is to embrace the new, to accept God calling us in new ways and into new places. This week, I happened to come across a blog by the Bishop of Nevada, the Right Reverend Dan Thomas Edwards. It's the first time I've ever read any of his blog, and his posting this week was about the state of the Episcopal Church and what's going on in the church. And so it begins with a question, what does the future of the Episcopal Church hold? And he goes on to say that, as I quote him, "It is in vogue to say the church is a dead letter," unquote. There are those who would write off the Episcopal Church saying it's heading to death, this is the end. But he says that's not his experience. In his own Diocese of Nevada, he sees parishes which are thriving, some are growing. And as he talks to bishops around the church, he sees parishes, hears of parishes which are growing, which are lively, dioceses doing great work. But he cautions that this call of God is a combination of taking things from our past, but also doing things which are new. being led into unknown territory, being led to see things in new ways. He says that God invites us into a future excitingly and frighteningly different from our past. It's not that there isn't anything from the past that's kept, but each age is called to be church in their own time and in new ways. Ultimately, he says, change is essential as God calls us to new things. Some things remain unchanged, but others change, and we must change to follow that call of God. But we must do this for the right reasons, he says. I quote, "We must not change in order to survive. That would be self-serving and unbearably boring. We must change in order to dance into the thing that God is doing, to experience the surprise and delight of grace erupting in new ways." I love that. We must change in order to dance into the thing that God is doing, to experience the surprise and delight of grace erupting in new ways. Being rooted in the past, being open to those new exciting ways that God is calling us, where grace is erupting, grace which is delightful. In our first lesson, we learn something of that surprise of God. We have the account of Samuel. God sends the prophet Samuel to see Jesse. One of Jesse's sons is called to be anointed king, and Samuel is sent to anoint him. So Samuel goes to visit Jesse and says, "Bring your sons." And the firstborn comes, the oldest, who is tall and impressive of stature, and Samuel thinks, "Here's the one." He gets ready to anoint him, but God does not say, "Anoint this one." And so the rest of Jesse's sons come, and still Samuel is not told to anoint them. So Samuel says to Jesse, "Is there any other son? Are these all your sons?" And Jesse says, "Well, there's the youngest. He's out tending the flock." When the youngest is brought to him, God says, "Anoint him." It is David that God has chosen. And God tells Samuel that the Lord does not see as mortals see. Mortals look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. God does not see as we see, and yet we are called evermore to see as God sees, to not be bound by those appearances of our world, not be bound by our assumptions of what is, but be open to that new sight, to see things in a new way, with fresh eyes. And so, on this fourth Sunday in Lent, I would ask and pray that our eyes be opened, that in whatever ways we might be blind, that blindness is healed, that we can see more and more as God does, not as mortals do. And that like that man born blind, we may see the light of Christ. We may recognize in Jesus that Son of God who comes to give us light. And we might see all others through that light of love and compassion and mercy. And may we be open to that call to newness, letting go of those things which would hold us back from doing God's will, from being open to God, from putting God at the center of our lives. May we let ourselves be changed, knowing it might be disorienting, the perspective might be really different, it might even be frightening, but trusting that one who is our good shepherd, the one who went to find that man when he was cast out, the one who promises to be with us, will be shepherding us and guiding us, protecting and comforting us as we move into that new land. And so I ask this day, how are you blind? How am I blind? How will Jesus open our eyes this day? And how will we see in new ways the light of Christ? Amen.